Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. I'm your host, Danny Kerr. Today, we're going to be talking with Brandon Vaughn. He's a longtime entrepreneur, business coach, and CEO of Hirebus, a recruitment automation software built specifically for contractors. Using what's called the right seat assessment, Hirebus helps contractors get the right people into the right roles so both the business and employee actually win. In this episode, I asked Brandon to walk us through the ideal hiring funnel for contractors, drawing on everything he's learned from building his own business to optimizing this process and baking it right into the right seat assessment. How do you find qualified people? How do you get them to actually show up for interviews? And how do you know that they're actually the right fit for the role that they've applied for? Brandon covers all of this and more. So let's dive in with Brandon Vaughn. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Brandon, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. Dude, I am so excited to have you. I just want to say I truly appreciate the chat that we had at Winter Summit. You are what I call an uber entrepreneur. You're a rare human. You're a specimen. And you've been through so much in your career and in your life. And I really want pull from that knowledge over the next little while here. There's lots I want to get into. I do want to focus a bit on recruitment. But before we do, there's just been a journey that's led up to who you are today. And I would just love to get into that for a few minutes. There's some stuff on Wise Coding's Hirebus. I'll let you kind of take it, but there's a lot in you. And I would love for you to just kind of unpack a few of the learnings and things that have come to where you are today.
Yeah, I'd love to. One thing, that's high praise, first of all, Danny, for saying that. It's much appreciated. And the feeling's mutual as well. Going to your guys's winter summit, it was emotional for me. And I know I shared that with you at the time, but just the community that you built, the power, it was palpable to be able to just feel how everyone was bought into serving each other. And it was definitely the highlight of my entire year going to that one. And I'm not just talking about like the first couple months of 2025. I'm talking about like the whole year, even before that, was really cool. So thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to dive in.
We need community, man. We're a bunch of weirdos. And
that's right. I love my weirdos.
We got all the weirdos.
We got all the weirdos, the right way. You bring them on. You have to be weird to be an entrepreneur.
You kind of
got to
be a little nuts. So
you have to. It's like jumping off a cliff and building the plane on the way down. That's not a normal thing that people do. Hey, I got this really secure job, honey. I'm going to quit it. I'm going to go start something from scratch. I have no idea if it's going to work, but I feel good about this. You know, I imagine our spouses feel we're weirdos.
So I literally had that exact conversation when we started Breakthrough Academy. That was like, and she was, I've been with her since like I was 16 years old. So thank God she trusted me, but she just looked at me like, I don't get it, but I know you're going to do it anyway. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So to get a big room full of weirdos is the highlight of my year. It's amazing. It's great.
So let's get into this, man. Like you've grew up in this industry. You grew up in the contracting space. You've worked with your dad. You've built out multiple companies. You're invested in something. Like, give us some of a rundown here. And I do want to actually get into Wise Coding a bit, because as I read about it, I was like, there is some meat in that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, it all started when I was born in 1984. No, I'm just kidding. I won't go back that far. I've been in home services my whole life. My dad was an owner-operator window cleaner that owned a window cleaning business for 33 years. So he started in 1978. So just to kind of put that in perspective, my entire childhood was raised by a man who was owner-operator on the tools every day, went out and did that for 33 years. And for a lot of those years, I worked right alongside him. I homeschooled through high school, worked 40 hours a week while I was homeschooling through high school, cleaning screens, washing windows, jumping up on roofs, cleaning gutters. So it was an amazing education on service. And I think that was the part that always kind of stuck with me and continues to stick with me, to just be in service of other people. I learned that from my dad. And I also got to see firsthand what a bus factor was. And a bus factor is a score. Someone taught this to me, by the way. I'm not the originator of it. A bus factor is a score on how many people in your company need to get hit by a bus before your business ceases to exist.
Right.
And as business owners, we want that number to be as high as possible. For my dad, that number was one. If anything happened to him, business was game over. And for him, in 2012, he collapsed on the treadmill. He was absolutely the most, you know, fit guy that you knew, low cholesterol, low blood pressure, super healthy, worked outdoors every day, but was taken to the hospital, diagnosed with heart disease. He had this crazy scar tissue around his heart from stress. And stress was kind of the culprit there. And when that happened, his business ceased to exist. Like, that was it. Like, I remember a tearful conversation where he said, man, maybe Brandon, I'll just go and be a Walmart greeter. Like, what am I going to do if I can't work physically? And so that kind of launched, because up to that point, I had done a lot of owner operator businesses, just like my dad. And that kind of launched a mindset shift for me. Like, crap, I don't want to do that same thing. So I have to be very, very intentional about trying to increase my bus score, be redundant, build a team. Because, you know, in from that situation, I had to kind of step in to take care of my parents because they had no income, and take care of my family with a newborn. And it was intimidating, but it was the push that I needed to kind of, I think, take business a little bit more seriously.
You know what I find interesting? The people that are the most like hardcore entrepreneurs that I know didn't come into this space because of inspiration, but became in because of desperation. Do you know what I'm saying by that?
That's so true.
It builds something in you when you have to fight for what you have. And it makes some of the best people we have, right, even like in, not beyond like the contracting space we're in. When you look at the people who are just dominating in the entrepreneur space in North America,
yeah,
their stories are not of easy. I was so inspired. They're like, it was hard and I had to work, right, and I had to live this, right, because I love it. And it's like, this is why you're weird.
there's a good motivator for, I have no choice, yeah, than to make this work. And stepping in and telling my dad, hey, I'll supplement your social security for the rest of your life, you know, $3,000 a month. I'll step in and try to make this business work, and I'll get on the tools, figure it out. I think I can grow it. I'll create a game plan. And it was terrible, by the way, for the first couple of years. It was a dumpster fire, but I had no choice. And I agree with you. The most interesting entrepreneurs that I know, yeah, it's not like, oh, I really have this big, huge, grand vision for myself and my why is so strong. It's usually like, no, I have to do this because, yeah, I have no choice. And I actually think that burn the ship mentality is probably what drives success, because, you know, there ain't any going back.
There's a layer of commitment that it's hard to grasp if it's artificial, right? So,
right.
Yeah. There's so much you've done, and I want to get into some of our topic here on recruitment, but like, I also want to touch on Wise Coatings, because along the way you've run a coaching company, you've run multiple contracting service businesses, and Wise Coatings is kind of like what I would say, like a really neat, just like crowning achievement, because you did it so fast and it grew so much. So first is like, give us context, like what is Wise Coatings? What are the metrics behind it? When I read this, I was like, dude, we have to at least touch on this for like 3 minutes.
Okay, so I built my cleaning business, went to about 70 employees over the course of the next 5.5 years, sold that business, exited, gave my dad a 6-figure gift, set him up for life. He's fully retired, doesn't have to worry about money anymore, started a coaching business. And something that kind of funny happened a couple of years in that actually hurt my feelings. It was, people said, well, you know, those who can't do coach. Mm-hmm. And Brandon was a sellout, and you know, Brandon couldn't do it. And the funny thing was, is at the time I had so much confidence in my ability to grow a service business. It's like, I know I could grow it even faster if I did it this go around. So it started from a place of ego. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to show them wrong. And so I created this YouTube series called Map to a Million, where I said, I want to start a business from zero. I have no experience in this industry. I want to pick an industry I have no experience in, not utilize any existing contacts that I have. In fact, do no work in the field from day one, which to this day, I still have never done a garage floor, not do any sales, and not even answer a phone call from a customer from day one. And it's interesting when you kind of build a business as if you have no arms and no legs, and you're dependent upon people, and you're dependent on marketing and systems, lo and behold, it's actually the correct way to grow a business. And it took off really fast. So I launched the business. We went from zero to $100,000 a month in month four. We did 100K. And then the first year we did 7 figures. We franchised it, which I was not planning on doing at all. I went out and hired a CEO that came in and franchised it, took it. And then now between our corporate owned stores and our franchisees, we have 37 locations nationwide. We're doing about $2 million a month. And that happened about 3.5 years from launch. Like, we launched this in January of 21. And a lot of the revenue comes from our corporate stores. You know, we're adding on new locations and they're just kind of growing on their own. And we're learning how to do that, which is hard and fun and exciting all at the same time. But my involvement in that business right now is less than an hour a week, where I just meet with my executive team and, you know, have my dashboards and KPIs, but truly building a business while I had a full-time job.
You built an entire company where you were never the business to begin with, which I didn't think is like the exact opposite what almost everybody else would go do, right? They are the business in the beginning and they feel like they have to be. And so they go and make it themselves and then they're stuck in it. Whereas you did the exact opposite. Yeah.
I call it the DIY death trap. And I think the problem is a lot of entrepreneurs that I talk to that are stuck, weirdly, are the most talented people I've ever met. They're super smart. They know how to do everything. They can tear apart their equipment inside out and backwards, and they know how to fix everything, every valve, every spring, you know, everything. And they know how, you know, every possible technical problem that comes out in the field, they know how to solve it, and they know how to price everything. But the problem is that when you have that kind of a mindset, it's extremely difficult to train other people how to know what it is that you know. So therefore, you end up being the bottleneck where everyone comes to you with the questions because you're the one that has all the answers. Whereas if you build a business first by hiring people smarter than you that know more than you do, and you bring them into the business and let them guide and operate and help you put together the strategy, for me, it's actually been some of the most exciting, fun entrepreneurial adventures I've had when I can build a business by bringing in people way smarter than me. And, you know, coincidentally or not, they grow faster and they're more successful. So I think that being smart and being good at a lot of things can actually be a handicap in business.
I also want to point out one thing. So you started this in 2021, you said?
Yeah.
So in 4 years, how many locations?
37.
37 locations. I don't know many. I know a couple actually, but I know very few people in this industry right now in the last 4 years have done that. In fact, most of the people listening right now have been busy just operating their business for the last 4 years and getting some incremental growth every year, maybe learning a bunch. But like, what would be like one thing that you could share with us where you're like, this is the fundamental difference that I approached this with and went in with for the last 4 years that most others that didn't do that were missing?
Well, anyone that's listening to this wants to go check out the series on Map to a Million, one thing you'll notice in the first 16 episodes is I spent all of the time at the very beginning creating a really strong brand, creating really strong core values that meant something. And all of our job ads that we create, we talk about our core values. We created this big vision and this big dream from the beginning that, to me, I'll be honest, kind of felt impossible and definitely felt like it was a huge vision, you know, and that's not the point. You can have a huge vision and a huge dream and not know how to get there. That's fine. But if your dreams have to be big enough for everyone else's dreams and goals to fit inside of it. So if you cast the vision of this is what we want to do, people who know how to do that thing are attracted to come in and say, hey, that's really cool. You have this big dream. I actually know how to do that. And I'm interested and I'll put my money where my mouth is. And I'll, you know, even take a little reduced salary or something if maybe there's some upside for me. And that was kind of eye-opening for me and how I structured Wise Coatings and how I structure all the businesses that I own is I put equity vesting schedules in place where my key individuals and people on my team can earn equity in the company based on hitting some of those goals and some of those things that they say they know how to do and what they can accomplish. So they're incentivized in the same goals and dreams that I have. And then the other part that I put in place is insanely robust training systems. So within the first 45 days of launching this business, we spent several days and recorded training videos to literally do absolutely everything inside of the company. And I didn't know how to do everything in the company. So I had to have a manufacturer rep come in and actually, you know, record, you know, help be the person on the tools showing how to do the thing, because I didn't know how to do the thing. And I was just the voice that was talking. Okay, so here we see that Jackson is doing this and doing that. And you notice how he does this? And he's like, cut, that's wrong, Brandon. We could do, okay, yeah, sorry, yeah, take it. So you notice how Jackson's doing this? And, you know, I just faked it, honestly. But I knew that it was important to have those training videos in place so that as we stacked on people at scale quickly, they could quickly get up to speed to know how they could come in and help. And that wouldn't be like a bottleneck to our growth. So I'd say that those are kind of the biggest things that I put in place with Wise Coatings that really helped kind of accelerate it. And then it just becomes a marketing problem to solve, not only to get external customers, but also to get internal customers, your employees, and sell them on the vision. But you have to have that vision. You have to have those core values. You have to have that stuff first to be able to have something to sell that's attractive. And then when they come in, they're not like, I got, you know, totally, you know, catfished on this job. You said it was awesome. And then I come in and it's a dumpster fire too. So you have to sell something that actually is what it is.
Yeah. People can sometimes underestimate the power of vision, because I think a lot of us are getting just busy 100%. Doing. We're busy doing, being doers. And when you actually sit right. back and think, like, what could this be? And you can begin with the end in mind and build backwards appropriately. It can actually be something of substance versus just thinking about what can next month be because I need to make payroll. And you lose yourself right. and you lose the direction. And you end up having to be that driving engine because you're the only one willing to do something without that clarity and direction. And this also sounds like you built a very clear pathway for people to get to where that vision was going to go.
Yes. Yeah. And that's key too. You can't just say, hey, we have a path for technicians to come in and eventually someday own their own business. Like, we actually have a path. And one thing I will say about the vision side is millennials, Gen Z, even Gen Alpha, there's this fundamental shift that's happening where employees are craving knowing that they're having an impact in the work that they're doing. Knowing that they're making a difference, knowing that their work matters. You know, rewind 20, 30 years ago, people used to wear as a badge of honor working at the same job for 30 years and doing the exact same thing that they'd done. And like, they're a company man. And it was about, you know, almost military-like service to their company. That is gone. That doesn't exist anymore. People want to know that they're a part of something bigger, that they're making a difference. And one of the cool things that I heard from someone saying that the number one thing that employees crave in a business is AIR. And it's an acronym for appreciation, inspiration, and recognition. You know, they want to be appreciated, even if it's something small, like a Slack message saying, hey, you really crushed it on that job. They want to be inspired. They want to know that you want to invest in their success and help them level up and do better in their life, not just professionally, but also personally. And they want to be recognized for their efforts. And a lot of people overlook those three components. And those things are literally placed higher by employees, even more than pay, especially for these newer generations. So it's like, vision is everything when you can help people also realize the vision for themselves, which is desperately needed in this generation as well.
You know, I've seen this a lot myself. I think about this in this way of like, people need to make money because they got to pay their bills and they've got to be able to do the basics, right? And there are some people that really like to save. So let's say be able to save 10%. And I do notice in recruitment, like that becomes the most important thing to them up until the point where that gets hit. It's like, great, I can pay my bills and I can save 10% or whatever their like financial needs are. But it's like, I just want the basics here. Everything beyond that, this intrinsic stuff you're talking about, becomes the most important thing after that. And it's very interesting. If you can just say like, look, we're not going to compete on pay, but I will make sure that you will be fine financially. Now that that's taken care of, let's talk about the real stuff. And that intrinsic stuff is what I think not only brings people in, but retains them long term.
It's interesting how that kind of almost sounds like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where it's like, okay, base physiological needs. Now, are we as business owners really thinking about the needs of our employees as it relates to them? Or are we only thinking about our own needs?
It's a really good way to put it, actually. Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into this. So you've done a lot. You've now moved into being, I think, the CEO of Hirebus. Yeah, correct?
Yeah, it's my full-time gig, baby.
Oh, man.
I'm locked in.
Now, the most valuable thing you can give is your time, right? And I've thought about this. I've seen this. I've watched some of your other podcasts. You've talked a bit about this. But like, you obviously decided to do this for a reason. And I really want to know, like, why go into the recruitment space of all things? Why did you choose recruitment?
So I love people. The best part about being an entrepreneur, in my opinion, is I have the gift of being able to pick exactly who my coworkers are. How freaking cool is that? I mean, what, whenever I see these business owners complaining about their lazy employees and their entitled employees and, you know, the people on their team that just suck, I'm like, what are you doing so colossally wrong that these are the coworkers that you're picking and you're complaining about them as if someone else put them inside of your business? Like, what is wrong? But the reality is that business owners really just lack training and coaching to know how to go out and recruit. I had no idea how to recruit. When I first started my business, I was literally posting $25 job ads on Craigslist, and that was all that I did. And, you know, and then asking every one of my friends and family members and people at church and, you know, and then had a whole, you know, crew of people that I knew that when I fired them, it was really awkward now to see them later on. Like, you know, it's just, you don't know what you don't know. And in my coaching business, you know, we had 20,000 people that came through our programs. And literally the number one problem that people would talk about was, I just can't get good people. And I don't know how to get good people. And when I started to really examine most bottlenecks and most issues, yes, systems and processes and all that is super important, but even perfect systems are followed by people. And if you have imperfect people or people that are not bought in or the wrong people, you know, or the right people in the wrong seats, you know, because that matters as well, then systems can also become irrelevant to an extent. So I knew I had to solve this problem for Wise Coatings. We have always adopted this mantra and mindset of we're always hiring. We never turn off our job ads ever. We create a waiting list of talent so that that way, anytime we have an opening, we can send out a blast and get people hired on demand because we never turn that faucet off. And I realize that most people don't do that because it's insanely hard to be interviewing 365 days a year when you genuinely are full and you do not need somebody. So I thought, well, how can we solve this with AI and software? And that's what kind of led me to try to solve this problem. And I never started a software company before. So that sounded fun and exciting. And I'm a weirdo that decided to go do probably one of the hardest businesses that I've heard of, most capital intensive, high risk. But it's been a blast, man. It's been absolutely a blast to do this.
Okay. So you're hitting on something that I was thinking a lot about, coming into this talk with you. And it's, we've dabbled in building software, at Breakthrough Academy. It's been a whirlwind. It has not gone the way we all anticipated. There's a lot of learning, but one thing I think it's so hard. One thing I think is undeniable is the amount of like thought and money and energy and meetings and collaboration and problem solving and like, the amount of thought that goes into figuring out what is the software, what is the problem we're trying to solve, what is the logic path to get this thing to be a worthwhile piece of software, basically, is far and away beyond anything I could have anticipated. And, you know, I think a lot of us have this thought of like, oh, software is when you like code stuff, right? Like you sit there and you it's like, no, like that's the after stuff. Like that's almost the easy part, really.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's everything before that to decide like, what is this going to be? And it has to match the market in such a way that it nails it. I was like, man, Brent, there's going to be so much learning today to just talk to you about what this app does, why it does what it does, and the inner workings behind how you figured that out so that we can use this in our business every day. Because whether people use this app or not, I think there's learning that you guys have done at, well, let's call it R&D, right?
Yeah.
That we could glean a ton from. So for today, let's.
I'm an open book, man. Ask away. Anything and everything. I'm happy to share.
Let's focus on this. So I just want to read. I went on your website and I read this one statement, and I thought it was not only a good marketing, which it is, but I thought it was like, if this is what it actually does, this is a game changer. So I just want to read this. So what is HireBus? It's the world's best home service hiring automation platform that scores and schedules only the top 1% of candidates directly into your calendar. So this thing will score and then schedule the top people in flow and make sure that you basically have like a nice full calendar of people to meet with, which when I, you know, any webinar idea, anytime I talk to members, I'm like, what's your biggest challenge with hiring? They're like, it's getting someone to show up for an interview. It's getting the right people to sit down with. And it sounds like you've narrowed right in on that. So let's talk about this a bit. And I would just love to understand, like, from the learning you guys have gone through to build HireBus, what are some of the processes or steps or strategies or things that you've uncovered where you're like, this needs to be known in the marketplace?
I think that the core thesis and philosophy that I believe, and all the entrepreneurs who own nine-figure businesses and home services or anywhere else, the top Fortune 500 companies even, they understand that recruiting is marketing first and foremost. And if you just learn nothing from this podcast other than that one core key concept, that recruiting is marketing, you'll already be ahead of the game with so many of their other competitors. Because all the same things apply. They're parallel paths. You know, we know that if we want to market our remodeling and contracting business, if we put our spend to 100% on marketing for customers, and then as soon as we get booked out a little ways, we shut our marketing back down to zero, what's going to happen? We're eventually going to get to a point where we have no work on the schedule for tomorrow, and then we like slam it back up to 100 again. That would be disastrous. And that's kind of the difference between this proactive and reactive. The best marketers on the planet know that you're always testing, you're always tracking, you're always tweaking your marketing message. You always are putting out that budget and that spend to be able to do that work of keeping things going and refining your process. And then we want to have as big of a top of funnel as possible so that we have the ability to weed out who's going to be a good customer and who's going to be a bad customer. So when we kind of sat down with HireBus, it started really at the job ads. Job ads suck.
Don't
most
they suck?
Job ads suck. Yeah, and I've literally asked people, hey, send me what job ads you're using now. And they send me their job description,
right,
which is a formal HR document that covers some legal bases and is good for setting expectations with like a hired employee and how you conduct performance reviews, maybe. But it's not an ad. You don't put your specs on, you know, an advertisement on your website of all the things that, you know, you do step by step. You sell it, you advertise it. So we loaded in hundreds of thousands of job ad data and identified the top attributes of what actually works, what works the best for getting good top of funnel. And that was kind of the core thing that we did in the first AI exercise that we went through, was let's use an LLM and data to process and find out what's the structure of the best performing job ads that get the most amount of candidates and get people engaged enough to where they actually want to follow through the process all the way to the end interview.
So
that's one component of it.
Can we pause there? What came out of that? Because this is what I mean. Like, the amount of work and research that was done on that one thing is more than any one listener is ever going to get the chance to go do. What came from doing that research? What are some like nuggets or just like key ideas that they could take and use when it comes to building job ads?
Well, funny enough, they're all marketing principles. Have a strong opening hook that can capture someone's attention within the first few seconds that they read the ad to where they want to keep reading it. Talk about them first. Don't talk about you first. This is one of the biggest mistakes I see in writing job ads, is that people, this company is a this and a that, and we're looking for this, and we're looking for someone who's this way. And and then if you talk about you, it's like, you must meet these requirements. And it's the most horrible way to write a job ad. Whereas when we write our job ads, we say, you're someone who loves competition and thrives in the fast lane. You're someone that's always seeking to level up both personally and professionally. You're someone that has a heart to serve others and realize that when you serve others, it will come back to you tenfold. And literally the opening lines of our highest performing job ads start with who you are. And the way that you know you've done it right is when you have candidates comment on it and they say, I've never read a job ad like this before, or it spoke to me. I really felt like when I was reading it, that I belong at your company. You're the company I was actually most excited about wanting to hear about. If you have a very bland thing, we're looking for a laborer, pays $18 an hour, must have a driving license, must have a clean, you know, criminal background. Like, who are you going to get? You're not going to get anyone that shows up to life excited and has really strong soft skills. You know, it's like the bare minimums for existence. You might as well put like, if you have a pulse. So that's probably some of the biggest learnings that we kind of took away from there. And then not being afraid to split test different job ad headlines. So for instance, for a pressure washing technician, what do you put as the job ad headline? Do you put pressure washing technician, pressure washer, gas wanted, gas powered squirt gun operator? Did you know that that one actually performed better than the other two by a factor of 3x?
Because it just made me laugh. That's why, because it elicits an emotional response.
And think about, put yourself in the shoes of the applicant that, and if you've never done this, I highly encourage you to go do this. Pretend that you're your best employee who's looking for a job. What are you typing into Indeed? Well, you know, you show up on Indeed's website, what are you typing? And then scroll through some job ads, read some job ads, see how easy it is to apply. On Indeed, you can apply to 50 job ads in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's like some of these are one click apply. And the only ones that will actually want to, you know, follow up with that process and continue with the company are ones where they get a really, really fast freaking response. I'm talking super fast speed to lead. And they have a really good hook that the candidate's actually read and taken a look at. And then the whole prospect experience is everything as well. How you engage, are you friendly? You know, do you have, you know, good voice and tone? Are you communicative? Do they know where they're at in the step of the process? And, you know, the speed to lead is everything. I think the stat is that it's like 10 days and over 60% of the applicants that have applied to your job have already moved on. It's crazy.
What is speed to lead? What's the timing? What's the ideal timing?
Ideal timing is that you're contacting them within 30 seconds of them applying. That's the ideal. If you really want to know, the stats are if it takes you up to 48 hours to get back to them, the drop-off rate is about 40%. So you have to respond to them. You know, think about Angie leads on marketing. If you want to use Angie or Home Advisor or one of these platforms, and you know that your prospect has multiple options of where they're going to buy from, you better be the first person to contact them. You better be the last person to contact them. Like that tail long experience is how people actually crush it with Angie and Home Advisor, and how everyone else just blames, oh, this prospect ghosted me. Sound familiar with your employees and your customers? I'm telling you, it's so identical in application to marketing. It's crazy, but we just don't view it that way. It's like, oh, especially old school people. Oh, well, you should just be lucky to have a job. It's like, no, you're wrong.
You know what? The first thing that came to my mind when you said 30 seconds, I was like, I could see a lot of people listening right now being like, but then I'm going to look desperate.
Hmm. So what?
Well, yeah, it's a good point. It's like, it works.
Here's a different way to frame it. We're growing so fast. We want to, our team is rapidly expanding and growing, and we're looking to fill positions as fast as we can. Like who wants to be a part of that company? You know, you want to be a part of the company that, you know, takes you 7 days to be able to get back to it. The reality is that I've seen people's hiring processes, and some people get overwhelmed with the amount of applicants. So they put all these hoops to jump through that they've manufactured where you got to call this phone number and you have to leave a voicemail, or you have to, you know, do this thing so that I can make sure that you've actually followed the steps. The best recruiters on the planet and the companies that actually have the best talent pool and the best labor pool, they don't do that because they don't want to accidentally push away people who are actually really good, but maybe they just didn't, you know, maybe they just missed a step, or maybe they applied to 20 jobs at once. The goal is to get your top of funnel as big as possible and then pull people down through the steps and then use filtering techniques and, or should I say prioritization techniques to know who you should be talking to. And then you have a massive selection of people to choose from. And on average, it takes about 200 applicants to get one really good quality hire. And most people will get about 20 to 40 applicants, and then they feel like they have enough to make a decision. It's not even close.
So if I summarize this first learning, it's that you're focused on the needs of the people you're trying to recruit, not focused on your needs.
Yes.
Okay.
Why should people care about your hopes and dreams if you don't care about their hopes and dreams?
Fair, right? Now you're getting into this next thought, which I'm really curious to hear and understand. So you've opened up your funnel. You've got far too many people than you could ever actually meet with. How do you bring it down to the right fit?
So we kind of do a go for no process, but one thing I will say is what we like to do with our platform is try to collect as much data from people as possible so that we can build a talent bench, a waiting pool. Because if you get someone that comes in, and usually this is what happens, you'll get so many people that are qualified and actually do well for a job that now you're putting people on a waiting list so that you can message them if and when you need to have another person. I mean, unless you're planning on never growing again for the rest of your company's existence, okay, you're not going to need to hire more people. If you're absolutely perfect at retention and never have someone have a life event comes up where they quit and move on to another job, you know, you're going to have to hire someone. You don't know if that's next week or that's 6 months from now. So we put people on waiting lists, and we make sure that when we go through that top process, we follow a step of having them fill out an application. Then we do a phone screen for them, ask them some other, you know, challenging questions to kind of come through, find out who's just absolutely disqualified for the job. We use an AI resume analysis tool that reads and scans and analyzes and outputs back into our system what their strengths are, what their experience is. Are they a serial job hopper? You know, did they potentially lie somewhere on their resume? Does it make sense logically? Is there any errors or omissions or things that are on there that we need to know about? We go through that process, and then we also give them the right seat score. And this is a proprietary assessment that we built with the help of an industrial behavioral psychologist that has millions of data points on the most successful candidates in Fortune 500 companies and in the trades. And we've identified benchmarks that show from a behavioral perspective who's going to be a good fit before you even interview someone. So we give everyone in our funnel that assessment as well, so we get a score for them. And then that prioritizes, okay, who are the people that we actually should be meeting with for our first round of official interviews? And then from there, that's where we move on to the additional ones. And usually we also do a working interview for a lot of positions as well, where someone will come out to a job site or we'll do a job shadow. And then we have a scorecard that we give our technicians or our salespeople or office teams so that they can give feedback to the hiring manager if they, you know, feel like they would be a good fit in our company.
This right seat score, is that what it's called? Right fit score or right seat score?
Right seat.
Right seat score.
Right. Yeah. Like get the people on the bus and then get them in the right seat.
Okay. So this is important. And let's think about, again, like the learning that went into designing this. How do you take what is a role in your company and determine who is the right seat or right fit for that seat? Like what's the process to be able to even do that? Because otherwise it's just my bias being like, I like this guy. I remember when I used to recruit early on, I used to be, this is like terrible, 18 years old running a painting company. I'm like, could I have a beer with this guy? Was like, that was the
and
right
he's
seat
drinking
score.
On the job and you're like, what in the world? I never would have guessed.
That was the right seat score. So obviously there's times have evolved, you know, the world's evolved, but like what is going on to enable that where it's like this human or this resume is the right seat potentially for this role? How does that match being done?
It's being done using the most cutting edge AI models that are all data driven. So it takes away the biases. It's impossible to have a hiring manager interview someone and not have a bias and say, I like them because they sound like me. They have the same accent as me. They grew up in the same town as me. They, you know, the same gender as me. Like it happens. And there's these biases that come in, whether they're intentional or not. And that can cloud the judgment of really finding good people that actually crush it for a given role. So the first thing that we do is we require a full written job description And this job description has 11 different categories and sections with their compensation, their skills, their absolute hard requirements, the preferred experience that they may have. And that is our basis that we load into our system. And then the AI will analyze every single resume against that job description. And then we also build out a company profile that has what are the company's core values? What are their services they offer? What industry are they in? Who are the owners? Who are the people that are directly managing these people? What do their behavioral profiles look like? What's their company culture like? And we get all these data points in our onboarding and we combine all these things together so that our intelligent model will go in and actually weigh that against their at the speed and at the accuracy that just frankly, a human can't match at this point with the least amount of biases. We don't remove humans from the process entirely. In fact, right now, the phone screenings that we do are conducted by humans and we're gauging the performance of that against AI models. And then of course the interview has to be in person. You have to talk to these people face to face and ultimately the business owner decides who they want to hire. But it just takes away, okay, instead of me having to interview 200 people, I just get to interview the top, you know, 2-3% of people on there.
You said something in there that I think is really important. You have the job description written first and you've decided what this role is and you've defined even the company that's recruiting for this job description very well. And when you've done that, that stays as a mile marker that before you ever met the people you're about to meet, you have to go back and reference and say, did we actually, can we confidently check off on the things that we wrote before we met John, who we love and we think we could have a beer with? Before we met John, does John's like objective experience and background actually match what we wrote 3 weeks ago before we ever met John?
Right.
Is that kind of what you're describing? But through like a much smarter like robot?
Yeah, 100%. And I'd say that the one thing that we actually discourage people that we work with is having too many hard requirements. So, you know, for instance, if I had a hard requirement that I only want to hire people for Wise Coatings that have 5 years experience of epoxy floor coatings experience, is that person really going to be the right fit for our company? When they come in, oh, you guys use this product? No, we only use Cimarron. Oh, you use this type of, no, you guys, you should be using this squeegee. You should be using that type of roller. And yeah, my previous company, we did it this way. And I mean, we've all been there where we've hired the experienced person and it was sometimes more work than it was worth to be able to integrate them in. What actually matters is people have a beginner's heart, even if they are experienced, which experience can be a great thing. But if they have a beginner's heart and they can come in and they have good soft skills and they're pliable and they're moldable and they're adaptable and they can conform and they can submit to the process and they understand the importance of the process and the checklists. So just because it's these certain hard requirements that even a business owner has in their mind, a candidate must have, obviously the best way to solve the labor problem and the talent problem is to be able to bring in people that may not have the experience and the skills, but then we can train them to do so. And so then the second part of it is really making sure you have a robust training process where you can take someone in who's a near beginner or maybe even has zero experience and through an automated way, through videos, an LMS, you know, a checklist, you know, certain steps that they take, they can get up to be a lead status exactly the way that you want them to do it. And they have no preconceived issues or bad habits to break them of. So it, you know, it's each of these sides that are kind of important. And when you're gauging someone, you know, all those factors kind of go into play when you select somebody.
This is an interesting concept. And I've seen this before, even some of the stuff we've talked about, which is like your training program and how robust it is will directly translate to your ability to recruit effectively in the marketplace. Because the more robust it is, the more open your pool can be. And the more open your pool can be, the more you can bring in what you're describing, which is younger usually, or just less experienced people that have all the right like genetic makeup of who they are as people. And then you can train them the skill.
I agree. And you're also solving the industry problems that we all deal with. I mean, you know, what we really want to be bloody cutthroat with every other one of our fellow business owners and steal away their employees from their business. And then everyone's this race to the top of who pays more. No, it should be, we should be leveling up the industry. And I believe it's our responsibility as business owners to contribute to the success of the industry as a whole by creating really solid training programs and showing the younger generation that being in the skilled trades is actually one of the best paths and careers paths that you can take. That's probably the most AI proof as well. I really believe that we're in a shift that's coming up here very, very soon where the trades is going to see a huge rebound, and we just have to be prepped and ready for it.
I want to take us back one step. We were getting a little ahead of here. I had one major question today on, we've done all this work now. We've got the ads out. They're written on the needs of the candidate. We've kind of figured out how to get app flow coming in. We're starting to decipher who we actually want to sit down with and like picking our right fit score. How do you get people to actually show up for an interview?
So I think that the biggest thing that it comes to solve this problem that it starts with is selling them on why they want to come all the way to that interview. Like there's a couple of things that are at play here. One, they literally just haven't read it all the way through, so they don't even know what it is that you're offering. Two, they read it and it's underwhelming. And, you know, they look at the pay and they're like, nah, less than what I want to make, whatever. They move on. You have to remember that they're applying to 50 different jobs within 30 minutes. Like that's the capability these platforms have. It's a numbers game. They're not going to go to 50 interviews. It's as throw the bowl of spaghetti against the wall and kind of see what sticks type of approach. And so the way that you can ensure you stick is you're first to lead and you're the last to follow up. Mm. And you're pulling people through and you're nurturing them. And text works way better than email, especially for current generation. And people are open to texting. So, you know, like even if you don't use HireBus, load your process into a go high level or, you know, some type of ATS that allows you to be able to send out automated messages and keep sending out automated messages until you see that they've taken the next step in the process and just pull people through the funnel and then get to people fast. You know, don't wait. Even in our case where we're always hiring and always recruiting for our clients, we recruit for our clients 365 days a year. We do the interviews too. So like we'll do the first round of interviews for all of our clients. And then we'll put them on a waiting list. And then the business owner, when they have, you know, someone that doesn't show up to work or they're having a problem with someone or they're looking to add another truck on the road, they'll say, hey, open up my calendar. And then boom, all of a sudden, you know, candidates will start popping up on their calendar because we manage all that, you know, initial step. But really focusing on that communication process all the way through is really, really important. And sending them the reminders, you know, if you just send them a calendar invite through email, that may work really great for your process. You live and die by your personal calendar. Likely the people who you're looking to hire, especially if it's a technician or a labor type role, they don't use a calendar at all. You know, so just because they've accepted it doesn't mean they actually know what it is. So sending confirmation texts, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And it's just gone are the days where you know, just say, well, if they really wanted this job, you know, they would just do this. It's like, no, you want to get a big top of funnel and then you can be selective about who you want to actually work with.
Can I ask you for like even more specifics around this? I would love to know, let's say it's Wednesday right now. I'm setting up my interview for Monday next week. What exactly, what communication, like frequency of communication, and maybe even just a few bits on what I'm saying, what exactly is being sent to that candidate to make sure they show up from a communication perspective?
So immediately when we get the interview scheduled and we send them to a Google Calendar, it has exactly what our clients' availabilities are. And this is what we use for our My Home Service businesses as well. They pop in there, they pick their time slot. Instantaneously, they're getting an email and text and they're saying, hey, you know, hey, Danny, so excited to see that you've booked a time for us. You know, we reviewed your application, your resume, and we're really excited to meet you. We think you could be, you know, we think you could be a great fit here. And like, that's like the immediate message that they get. Just want to make sure that you got the appointment. Can you reply to this message and let me know that you've confirmed that you have this appointment? You know, and here's a little link to add it to your calendar if you want. We'll also message you the day before, and we'll also message you the hour before and 15 minutes before. Like that's kind of like the timing and the cadence as far as like, you know, reminders go.
Beauty.
And then the messages, they're very friendly. They're exciting. You know, we use emojis. because our target demographic uses emojis, and you know, we want to be approachable. We don't want to be a bro, but we do want to, we do want them to feel like we have a really amazing company culture, and we want to stand out, you know. And we even have video links that we'll send our clients, say, hey, we thought we wanted to share this little YouTube video, you know, that comes from, you know, your future coworkers, you know, winky face. And then it has like our little YouTube video that has what working at Wise Coatings is like. And it has, you know, video interviews of all of our, you know, people that we have that work for us. And it's a really powerful, emotional type of video. And that gets people excited and like, wow, that was great. That was awesome. You know, we want them to be armed with excitement, because the chances they'll show up just increase exponentially.
Yeah, you're humanizing the communication and not making it so just like robotic, even though it's a bit of a robot doing it. You're making this thing very personalized and just like, hey, we're here to meet with you. We're here to get to know you. We're here to have a good time and see if this would be a good fit.
And you need to understand who your competition is. It's not the fellow home service business that's also sucks at hiring and recruiting. It's the Amazons. It's the FedEx. It's Uber. It's the gig economy. It's these big Fortune 50, Fortune 500, I mean, warehousing, shipping, you know, going out and doing Amazon deliveries. When you have a fulfillment center that pops up in your town, like there goes a lot of people, because they can come in and make 15 to 20 bucks an hour on their own flexible schedules, and they can clock in, clock out, whatever they want, and come to work. You know, it's just, when you look at their process for recruiting, they have all these kinds of reminders. So you have to stand out.
Makes tons of sense. Okay, let's wrap it up. I've got a few like quick hit questions. Are you cool with just a few, just like things that I've asked all the time that I have my own opinion on, but I would love yours.
Yes, okay. I'm good. I'm trying not to die from a coughing fit. So let's fire away.
Mute if you need to. Okay, so in the context of how much allocation, time, effort, money, efforts, or time, money, effort, skill, we should be allocating towards recruitment, what percent of revenue should we be budgeting for every year?
Usually what we like to see is at least about, you know, about 1% of revenue towards recruiting. And sometimes it can be higher, sometimes it can be lower. We like to kind of drive that down a little bit. But if you're doing $100,000 a year in revenue, you should be spending $1,000 a month on recruiting. Like that's not uncommon at all. The average cost to hire an employee, average cost in the trades, is $4,300 per hire. That's with the recruiting efforts, the spend, the time invested into it. That doesn't even account for the cost of turnover. So if you can allocate a little bit of spend to make sure that your pipeline's always full, you're picking from absolutely the best people, your retention is going to increase, your turnover is going to drop down, and you will absolutely conquer the labor side of the equation. So 1% is roughly what I say.
That sounds very reasonable. How much time should we be budgeting on and spending? And this could be the owner, this could be maybe somebody on their team, but how many hours should go into this? For let's say a company that's at $2 million a year, owner's operating it, maybe has a bit of back-end support help.
Well, I will say that, you know, shameless plug, if you use Hirebus, it can be way, way, way less. But usually for a company that's doing a couple million in revenue, you probably have a full-time dedicated person, whether it's an EA, a virtual assistant, or you know, a split between an HR person and assistants that are managing these. Because if you do the work properly, if you actually do the work properly, you're doing a lot of phone screens. You're talking to a lot of candidates. You're reading all their resumes. You are calling references and doing a little background research on them. All of that takes a lot of time, which is why AI is one of the biggest disruptors to the recruiting thing, because this can all be done autonomously. And that takes away, you know, 30 hours plus. So ideally, if you figure when you're actively in recruit mode, you're probably going to be spending, you know, a few hours a week in the active recruiting side of things, like even if you use something like Hirebus. And then when you're not, you don't need to always be doing those interviews. If you don't have a tool like Hirebus, you know, you should be absolutely doing interviews and setting aside at least 5 to 10 hours a week, you know, to make sure that you're, you know, constantly keeping that waiting list and pulling those people in.
Cool. Brandon, let's call it a day. This was amazing. Dude, you cool. are a wealth of information. And I know we went down like one very sliver of a vertical of the life that you have lived. I had a ton of fun. And I think we should probably do this again. Man. I think that it probably begs for all of us to go figure out where Hirebus is. Is there any? We will put a link in the description for everybody. But is there anything you want to speak to this? It's unbelievable work trying to solve this issue, because it is what I see the biggest issue when it comes to our industry.
I appreciate it. And yeah, one thing that we spent a lot of time doing is we know that AI is only going to get faster. So a unique thing that we did is we built our architecture of our software that is based upon the pillars of data of the business owners, of the candidates. So every time there's a new upgrade that you see in the news of a new AI model, a new LLM that came out, you know, whether it's Grok or GPT or Llama or any of these ones, anytime you see those upgrades, you could be excited because our entire platform just got upgraded. And this was some cool advice that we heard from Sam Altman a while ago that said that this is like how AI companies should be focusing, is every time an upgrade comes, like their entire platform all of a sudden becomes way more intelligent, way more. And this is what we're seeing just in the last few months. It's absolutely been game changing how much more intelligence become. And even in the next couple months, it's going to only continue to get better. So excited to be able to help anyone. Feel free to reach out as well on Facebook, Instagram. If you have any questions, you'd love to, I love geeking out. I answer any message that someone sends to me. So feel free to hit me up as well. And if you're interested in learning more, you know, check out hirebus.com/BTA. And we can, you know, certainly have an opportunity to get on a call and chat a little bit more about it.
Awesome, Brandon. Okay. Thank you for your time. I'll let you get back to it. And everybody listening, have a good week. Talk to you later.
Cool. Thank you guys. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.